I'm Nora Flaherty, and you're listening to MPBN. Ahead on Maine Things Considered this evening, a new study reveals water chemistry in Casco Bay has changed in ways that threaten the health of shellfish. And a showdown is looming in the Maine legislature over Governor LePage's refusal to release voter-approved money for conservation. First, this news. At 5:32, I'm Nora Flaherty with this look at Maine news. A coalition of Maine mayors told reporters at a statehouse news conference today that they have a broad agenda for the current session of the legislature, from improving broadband access to restoring funding for the Efficiency Maine Trust. They say there are parts of Republican Governor Paul LePage's tax plan they like and parts of the Democratic plan that they prefer. And the mayors say they would like to work on issues with the governor, but Augusta Mayor David Rollins says the LePage administration tends to be confrontational.
They tend to be confrontational within their own party. There was a pretty aggressive statement made to fellow Republicans if they didn't support this program that he'd be out campaigning against them.
As part of his two-year state budget, Governor LePage is proposing a sweeping overhaul of state taxes. Portland Mayor Michael Brennan says he'd be more than happy to reduce taxes, but he says the focus should be on the property tax, which he feels places the biggest burden on Maine citizens. The Maine Secretary of State's office has approved the language for a 2016 ballot measure to legalize marijuana in Maine. Legalize Maine President Paul McCarrier.
This is the first initiative to legalize marijuana in the world that does not have funding from a D.C.-based or corporate source. We are all from Maine.
A competing legalization initiative is being backed by the Marijuana Policy Project. McCarrier says he hopes that Washington, D.C.-based group will drop its measure and throw its support behind the Legalize Maine effort. By a vote of 7-1, the Portland City Council has approved a ban on e-cigarettes in certain public places. The measure prohibits the use of e-cigarettes in eating establishments, both indoor and outdoor, as well as outdoor locations that are currently already smoke-free in the city, like parks, open spaces, beaches, athletic facilities, and playgrounds. And the Maine House has rejected a bill that would prohibit retailers from using disposable plastic bags. The Democratic-controlled House voted 84-62 against the measure today. The original legislation sought to impose a 5-cent fee for single-use plastic bags, but it was amended in committee. Looking ahead to the weather tonight, partial clearing in most of the state, but a little cloudier in the north. A few showers ending late with winds settling and temperatures in the mid-30s to low 40s. Tomorrow, partly sunny, except in the north, where we'll see more clouds and a slight chance of a shower. Temperatures in the 50s tomorrow, with on Thursday and Friday, variable cloudiness. Temperatures also in the 50s. This is Maine Public Radio. I'm Nora Flaherty. This is Maine Things Considered on MPBN Radio. I'm Nora Flaherty. Well, a showdown is looming in the Maine legislature over Governor Paul LePage's refusal to release about $11.5 million in voter-approved conservation bonds until lawmakers approve his plan to increase timber harvesting on public lands. Republic Senator Roger Cates of Augusta is building a bipartisan coalition to support a bill that would prohibit the governor from holding the bonds, except in extraordinary circumstances. But that doesn't mean Republicans loyal to LePage don't have the votes to sustain a likely veto of the bill. A.J. Higgins has the details.
Divisive political strategies often produce casualties. But Republican Senator Roger Cates says the will of Maine voters shouldn't be one of them.
When the people of Maine have spoken at the ballot box, no one person, even a governor, should be able to veto that decision.
Bolstered by the support of four additional GOP senators as well as several Democratic lawmakers, Cates is advancing a bill in response to the current State House impasse stemming from LePage's refusal to release millions in bonds that would benefit the Land for Maine's Future program. LePage says he will not authorize the bonds until lawmakers agree to his plan to harvest additional timber on state-owned public lands. The Republican governor wants to use the additional money to fund new home heating programs. LePage has leveraged bond proposals to achieve policy goals before, but with some land deals on the verge of collapsing because of the governor's position, Cates says the game of brinkmanship has gone too far.
Politics is rough enough around here these days, but we should not add to the meanness by holding innocent bystanders hostages. Voter approval of land conservation in Cumberland and Augusta shouldn't be collateral damage to a disagreement about cutting trees in Aroostook. As far as we can tell, the governor's choice to ignore the will of the people is unprecedented in the 195-year history of our state.
Democrats in the House, along with some Republican representatives, quickly got behind the bipartisan effort. The bill requires the governor to issue any future general obligation bonds that have been approved by voters unless one of five specific conditions exist. Those conditions include, among others, bonds that produce a debt service greater than the amount budgeted, an adverse impact on the state's credit rating, or an indication that the project the bond was approved for is not proceeding. Backed by such groups as the Nature Conservancy and the Sportsmen's Alliance of Maine, Cates's proposed restraints on the governor's ability to block the bond-issuing process has also attracted plenty of critics.
Senator Cates's proposal against the governor is consistent with aspects that he's done in the past, where he's always wanting to fight with the governor and not really working with the governor and taking the stands that we need to take to move public policy together.
House Republican leader Ken Fredette of Newport rejected any suggestion that the governor is holding conservation bonds hostage. Instead, he says the real problem at the State House revolves around a general unwillingness to recognize that Mainers have elected LePage to two successive terms in office. Fredette says that means the governor's critics need to be more open to his policy priorities. The governor's potential trump card in this latest clash over bonds would be to veto Cates's bill. But Cates isn't particularly worried about that.
I'm very optimistic that if it comes to a vote that we'll have enough votes to pass this and to override a veto, but time will tell.
Now, during the afternoon, LePage released a statement saying, quote, Cates and the other sponsors of this bill should be more concerned with keeping low-income Mainers warm than grandstanding for TV cameras. If they want LMF bonds released, they and their environmental friends should support my bill that would direct money from the state's timber harvest to help Mainers with more affordable heating options for their homes, end quote. For MPBN News, I'm A.J. Higgins.
This is Maine Public Radio, and you're listening to Maine Things Considered. Still to come, what it takes to be a foster parent. But first, a new study reveals rapid changes in the chemistry of the water in parts of Casco Bay. More using more than 20 years' worth of data, the environmental group Friends of Casco Bay has found high levels of nitrogen and low oxygen levels in a number of coastal locations. That has worrying implications for Maine's shellfish industry. Tom Porter has more.
Environmental advocates, local business owners, and residents gathered by Portland's waterfront Tuesday morning to unveil a long-awaited update on the health of Casco Bay. The report has been more than 2 years in the making and taps into at least two decades' worth of data. To be clear, the study's overall conclusions are not that bad.
Generally speaking, the bay is in good health.
Mike Doan is a research associate with Friends of Casco Bay, which published the report. He points to a map containing a health index of the bay. Many areas are marked green or yellow, meaning the waters there are in good or fair health, with relatively manageable pH levels of acidity.
From the bird's eye view, things are in good shape. Where we have problems are in some small local regional areas that we're trying to focus on.
Those are the five areas on the map marked red, from New Meadows Lake near Bath to Peebles Cove near Cape Elizabeth, all of them close to the shore. The water is more acidic at those sites and oxygen levels are lower, says Doan. And there's a correlation, he says, between this and higher levels of nitrogen, a chemical considered essential to plant growth on land, but which is harmful if too much of it ends up in the ocean.
The thing we're most concerned about right now is acidification, another negative consequence of having too much nitrogen. Our waters, our muds, our clam flats are becoming more acidic.
Which, as many in Maine already know, is having a damaging effect on some of the state's shellfish harvest.
Clear water doesn't necessarily mean it's clean. You can't see nitrogen in the water.
Jennifer Fox is co-owner of Andy's Old Port Pub on Portland's waterfront.
Some of the ways that it's impacted us as business owners is that we've actually seen the Maine foods that we're proud to serve aren't available to us anymore.
Gulf of Maine shrimp have been off the menu for the past 3 years now, she says, while scallops have become less available every year as the season gets shorter and shorter. Researcher Mike Doan says one of the biggest culprits behind higher nitrogen levels is increased runoff caused by higher rainfall levels mixed with pollution. But he says there are measures we can take. The report lists 59 things people can do to help improve the health of Casco Bay. An important one, says Doan, is to reduce the amount of fertilizer you put on your lawn.
A lot of the fertilizer you use won't all be taken up by the plants. They will run off. Or make sure you're not fertilizing right before a big rainstorm.
Last year, the Maine legislature established a 16-member commission to study the effects of ocean acidification on the state's entire marine economy. In February, the panel recommended the state issue a $3 million bond to fund further study of the issue. For MPBN News, I'm Tom Porter.
Finally today, at a time when the demand for foster placements is growing, Maine has a shortage of foster and adoptive parents. Last month, the Department of Health and Human Services announced it needs more than 100 additional foster families and another 100 adoptive families. While there's been an uptick in interest since the announcement was publicized, the number of children in the system who need homes is still high. Patty White reports.
When 17-year-old Catherine first arrived as a foster child at Dottie Bishop's home 5 years ago, she was nervous.
Well, it was a new home for me, and the last one, it kind of scared me a bit.
Catherine, who asked that we not use her last name, says that before coming here, she'd been living with another foster family, but it wasn't a good fit. And her situation before that, living at her uncle's house, was even worse.
Let's just say in my uncle's house, I was kind of abusive.
But Catherine, who has Asperger's, says that when she came to Dottie Bishop's home, she felt comfortable almost immediately.
These kids have a lot of issues that they have to deal with, you know.
Dottie Bishop has been a foster parent off and on for years. Right now, she has four kids in her home. Two 17-year-old girls and two young boys, ages 4 and 5. Bishop used to own a daycare and has a son of her own, but after he grew up, she says the house felt empty.
I always wanted a lot of children. It was always my way. That's why I had a daycare. And this is even better, you know, because they hear all the time.
But according to the state, there just aren't enough Dottie Bishops in the system right now to meet the growing demand for homes.
We have seen a significant increase in the number of children coming into our care.
Mary Mayhew is the commissioner of the Department of Health and Human Services. She says in Maine, there are more than 1,900 children in foster care, an increase of 400 in the past 3 years.
Certainly, the level of substance abuse and its impact tearing apart families and jeopardizing the safety of children is certainly one of the largest contributing factors.
And the department has acknowledged there are barriers to finding more willing foster and adoptive parents. On a recent Maine calling program, some would-be foster parents called to complain that they've had a hard time getting qualified and say that some qualified parents have opted out due to lack of support from the state in the form of mental health services for some kids. The director of Child and Family Services, Jim Martin, a guest on the program, responded that DHHS is working on the issue.
There is a need to figure out how we provide more hands-on direct support for those foster families and make sure that when they pick up the phone and they need a call back from the department, that we're there to respond to that.
Foster parents must complete training to become a licensed foster home and receive an average subsidy that ranges from $22 to $36 a day. Dottie Bishop completed extra training required to take in children with greater needs. And she admits that caring for them is challenging at times.
It is. But you need to stop and remember when you were a teenager. You know, what if your parents had given up on you? You know, I mean, everybody deserves a chance. And the sad part is, these kids are our future. And if people don't help them, then what kind of future are we going to have?
Kids in foster care normally have things bad that happen to them.
Bishop's other 17-year-old, Caitlin, arrived 6 years ago from an abusive household and says she was so angry she snarled at Bishop. Bishop says Caitlin has come a long way since. She's made the honor roll at school. And Catherine, the other 17-year-old, says that since living with Bishop, she's come out of her shell. She's learned to stand up for herself. Most kids, she says, just need time and understanding from adults.
They need to be more there for them, like take care of them and help them when they need it.
While the goal for every foster child is to reunite with his or her biological parents, that's not always possible. It wasn't for Catherine and Caitlin, but they still visit their mothers and have chosen not to be adopted. Instead, Bishop sought permanency guardianship for the girls. She says now they know they'll never have to leave, and there's a place they can always come home to. For MPBN News, I'm Patty White.
It's 13 minutes before 6 o'clock. Time to check the weather with meteorologist Paul Cousins.
We are the reluctant landlords of the status quo as a panoply of low clouds and cool air continue to swirl into Maine from the Maritimes. Winds will relax this evening. Showers press southeast, ending late. Clouds breaking south of Bethel, Bangor, and Machias by dawn. Mid-30s to low 40s. Tomorrow, Thursday, Friday, quiet. Expect variable cloudiness statewide with isolated sprinkles possible. It will be brightest along the mid and south coast. Temperatures will range from the low 50s north to near 60 south with some localized afternoon sea breezes. Although not cloud-free, Saturday a notable uptick in sunshine for all but down East Maine. And this will propel temperatures to more seasonable levels. Sunday holds promise as well. This is meteorologist Paul Cousins for the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.
And that's Maine Things Considered for today. Thanks to Jay Field, Mal Leary, and Ed Morin. I'm Nora Flaherty.